From WNYC, this is The Sporkful.
Well, let me ask you this right off the bat. How many drinks do you have in an average week?
Oh, man, my doctor asked me this yesterday, and I totally lied to her. I was like, oh, you know, two a day. I would say I probably average 21 drinks a week.
Wow. That is impressive.
Yeah, easily.
And does a day ever go by without you having a drink?
Yeah, yeah. Not that often. I'm definitely on the far end. And I'm not saying that to be a great drinker, you need to, like, consume a lot of alcohol. But there is, like, a comfortability that comes where it's not about, like, getting wasted, but it's also not about, like, being kind of prudish about it. It's just part of your life.
Summertime drinking season's upon us, and I'm here to make sure that you not only have the correct drink in your hand, but that you're drinking it correctly. You just heard Matthew Latkiewicz, author of You Suck at Drinking. Coming up, he and I'll cover one of my favorite topics, buzz management. It's a crucial, crucial issue, people. You may want to take notes. Plus, what beers go best with what weather forecasts? I'll ask the women behind the blog Bitch Beer. And I'll explain why I love light beer, but hate their marketing. Pour yourself a cold one and get comfy. This is The Sporkful. It's not for foodies, it's for eaters. I'm Dan Pashman. Matthew Latkiewicz has covered drinks and drinking for Grub Street, McSweeney's, and Details. His new book is called You Suck at Drinking. And he and I really are kindred spirits. I feel like he talks about drinking the way I talk about eating. He joins me now from San Francisco. And Matthew, I want to start by asking you, what do we all need to do to become better drinkers?
Drink more so that you know how to do it.
Yes.
Like, that's what I would say.
You're right.
Like, I want people to be like race car drivers. You know, like, you know, you speed up, you slow down, you're in tune with your highly honed drinking machine, which is you and your body.
So, Matthew, one of the topics that you cover at length in the book, and it's a topic that I cover in my book, and it's a topic near and dear to my heart, is the topic of buzz management. In your book, you have an inebriation chart where you lay out different types of parties, and you say they have different inebriation levels. So let's start off, as we often do here on The Sporkful, by defining our terms. Explain to me this inebriation level metric.
It's a 1 to 6 scale. The thing there is you got to match the inebriation level to the activity. And so, you know, it starts out at a 0. Of course, you're not inebriated at all. You have had 0 alcohol in the past 12 hours. And it goes up to 6. 6 is hard to describe, for how can one describe the inside of a black hole? And in between are the other levels kind of inebriation, you know, from just being a little more fun at parties to really, really wanting to do karaoke.
But one of the things that I want to ask you about, so number 3 in the inebriation chart is, you write, also called the ridge or the knife's edge. This is the level that every drunk person attempts to hold on to, but that is as fleeting as a good morning stretch. One more drink sends you to the other side. No more drinks and you sober up more quickly than you wish. I would like to argue that the best drinkers, the people who are really, truly skilled at buzz management, can achieve a number 3 and sustain it for an extended period of time.
Oh, you're talking about the drinking unicorn. I think that's the aspiration. I think, like, that's, I agree with you. That is possible, but I tell you what, it's hard to dial in. It's hard for me to dial in.
Because you say
I suck at drinking.
So number 4, if you were to slip ahead and go to the next level, you say number 4 is inebriation nirvana. You have lost yourself. You have 0 inhibitions, but you don't yet need to sit down on the curb and throw up. So, I mean, that sounds to me like pretty drunk. But to me, typical day-to-day drinking, number 3 is where you want to be. And I think that we need to figure out how to stay at number 3 for longer than you suggest we can.
You know, you need to have a couple 4s once in a while, you know, just like you need to open up the throttle, you know, go do your karaoke and things like that. But you don't want to live there because then you wake up the next day and you're like, whoa, I slept in my pants again. You know? so you don't want to live that way. What do you do? What do you think? How do you think we can do this?
I mean, to me, I think the first thing you got to think about is balancing alcohol intake with food intake.
Yes.
That is the key to effective buzz management. And as you note in the book, once the alcohol is in your bloodstream, it's in there, and it's not coming out until time takes its course. There is no cure once the alcohol is in your blood. But when you have food in your stomach, it slows the absorption of alcohol into your bloodstream.
Right, you can regulate. Yeah, it doesn't all dump at once into your bloodstream. Yeah.
So that is, to me, that is the key. And so I like to start drinking a little bit. Like let's assume this is going to be a several hours occasion and the goal is to get to number three and then hold it there as long as possible. I think the key there is you want to drink half a drink to a drink on a mostly empty stomach, because then you get you're right into the flow of the party. And you're at, let's say, a number two. Or maybe you're right at number three, but then very soon thereafter, you're eating food. All right, you're putting food in your stomach. You do not want to start a second drink until you've eaten something.
This is like talking to Obi-Wan Kenobi. it's just like, yes. I'm like, oh, of course that's what it is.
So I want to go through several of the different types of parties that you talk about in the book. I want you to tell me the inebriation level that you recommend for that party, and then I want you to give me your basic sort of buzz management strategy, drinking strategy for that specific type of party. You ready?
All right.
First off, birthday party for a child. What's the inebriation level? What's your strategy? Because I love that you encourage drinking at these types of events. I'm with you 100%, but I might need help with my strategy. What should I be thinking going in?
This I rate as an inebriation rating of 2. 2 is what I call the everyday buzz. That's where you kind of have like the tingly brain a little bit, like you're feeling a little more jovial, but you could also still you could also still speak in church or something, it'd be I got this. And that's where I think, you want to choose your drink real wisely. I would go stick with beer or wine, things that you can kind of nurse and just kind of it's more of a slow, a drip, like an IV drip.
Right. I like that.
Of alcohol. So you never get a little. You're taking the edge off.
Right.
That's perfect. That's exactly right. Children are basically drunk. I mean, they basically act drunk all the time. So I think I need to have a little bit of alcohol just to kind of get in their rhythm,
Do you have kids?
Just to kind of, I do, yeah.
How old?
Yeah. I have a 20-year-old.
Okay, so you're past birthday parties for little kids.
Yeah, totally. But I have been to my share, and I still go to my share.
Do you agree with me that there is a bell curve of parenting capability that sort of is in place when you are drinking, such that when you're at number two at a kid's birthday party, that you are a better parent on average than at a zero?
If you find, you're taxed by you got to be at the children's birthday party. You got to have the energy up. You got to last. For me, I'm going to be more engaged in that if I have a beer, but for some people that's, maybe not the case. But I think it's about knowing, is it going to turn you into a better version of yourself for that specific event?
I was surprised to see that you put the inebriation level for a bachelor party at only 3.5. I mean, this is sort of like, to me, bachelor party is sort of once in a lifetime drunk. Why only 3.5?
I felt like we have to balance this out. We can't have everybody doing that, because then you end up, you might end up invading a small country by the end of it all.
You need a chaperone.
So you gotta have,
you're saying.
Yeah, exactly. You got to balance. So that's the average inebriation rating of 3.5. So some people have to balance out the 6 that's going to be happening.
Right, the black hole.
With The Bachelor.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
You offer suggested adjustments to the inebriation ratings based on a variety of factors. If you don't want to be at the party, -1 from what the average is. If the party sucks, +2, meaning get more drunk. And there's other ones like that. You say that if there are fatty snacks like nachos served at the party, it's +1. What's the logic there?
If it had something that you could use to soak up the alcohol or kind of slow it down, then you could be more drunk. I don't think that actually makes any sense. I think what I meant on that one is like you could have more drinks because you're gonna be you're actually gonna be a net zero if you've got fatty snacks versus if you've ever been to a party and it's like celery sticks and radishes. You know, and it's just sort of like, only have one martini at that party,
right?
You know, you're gonna be in trouble otherwise.
I think, Matthew, that you can attain a higher level of inebriation if fatty snacks are readily available because that will allow you to quickly course correct if you're in trouble.
Oh, that's
so it gives you more margin for error. I was actually going to say that you could even go plus two if there are fatty snacks.
Oh, I like it. You know what? For you, Dan Pashman, I will make that adjustment right now to my copy of the book.
Oh, I'll do it in mine, too. Hang on. Everyone else, do this at home, please.
Yeah, please. This is page 54, and you're going to want to take out your pen and add another plus two for the fatty snacks, everybody.
Got it.
Got it. Perfect.
Well, Matthew Latkiewicz, the book is You Suck at Drinking, available now wherever books are sold. Thanks so much, Matthew.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Coming up, is beer better in a frosted glass? What about in one of those helmets with the two can holders and the straws that come down to your face? I'll ask the women behind the blog Bitch Beer. And I'll go on a rant about light beer. You'll want to hear that. Hey, so I got a great idea. Let's have lunch together. Yeah, all of us. We're planning the first ever Sporkful Brown Bag Lunch, a Google Hangout where we all bring our lunches and share ideas for how we can make them all more delicious. I'm not sure yet what I'll have that day, but I'll make sure it's something special. As for you, you got an innovation you want to run by me and other eaters? Is there like a certain food conundrum that's been tripping you up you want to discuss over lunch? Come to the Sporkful Brown Bag Lunch. It's Friday, June 12th at 1 p.m. Eastern. And down the road, we'll do these at different times of day. Again, Friday, June 12th, 1 p.m. Eastern. Join the conversation at sporkful.com/hangout. Welcome back to The Sporkful from WNYC. I'm Dan Pashman. Before we get to my next guest, there was a recent controversy in the beer world that caught my attention, and I want to offer a little commentary on it. I like light beer. I believe there's a time and a place for every beer on earth, and light beer is no exception. When I'm drinking all afternoon at a barbecue or the beach, I don't want to feel like I got a bowling ball in my stomach. I want a beer that tastes like it's 25% water. Light beers fit the bill. But I buy light beer in spite of, not because of, its marketing. For instance,
the new Miller Lite Vortex bottle. Its specially designed grooves let that great Pilsner taste flow right out. Taste greatness.
So Miller Lite had the Vortex bottle a while back. Remember that? It has swirling grooves around the inside of the bottle's neck. They didn't even pretend that this would improve the beer itself. Then there's this one.
There it's the new Coors Light Gold Certified Bottle. When the mountain changes color, your beer is certified cold.
Hey guys, what's going on?
Coors Light makes bottles that change color to tell you how cold the beer inside is. In other words, they spent millions of dollars to make a device that does something that's already been done effectively for millennia by your hands. Then there's Bud Light. They ran a whole ad campaign touting the beer's drinkability.
I like that drinkability, huh? Drinkability means Bud Light's easy to drink.
Drinkability? Their slogan might as well have been, our product satisfies the most basic criteria of the definition of a beverage. But recently, Bud Light went from dumb too offensive. As part of their Up for Whatever campaign, they released a bottle with a label that reads, the perfect beer for removing no from your vocabulary for the night. Again, the perfect beer for removing no from your vocabulary for the night. Seriously, Bud Light, that's your slogan? What, did someone already take the date rape beer? Clearly, this is insensitive and offensive, right? Apparently, not to people at Anheuser-Busch and their ad agency, BBDO. According to the Wall Street Journal, the message in question went through at least 5 layers of approvals before going to print. Now, after a public outcry, Bud Light said they'd stop printing the message on future bottles. Great. But it still blows my mind to think that anyone read that message and said, yes, this is a good idea. I mean, if they thought that was okay, I want to know what messages didn't make the cut. Bud Light, so watery, she'll hardly know she's drinking. I wish these beer companies had talked to me before developing their ad campaigns. Here's a slogan that would get me to buy more Bud Light. Bud Light, so watery, it hydrates while it intoxicates. For the right price, I'd also be happy to help Coors and Miller develop some real innovations in their beer vessels. Like a can that stays cold even after you take it out of the fridge. Or how about a grooved bottleneck that always gives you just the right amount of fizz when you pour the beer into a glass? Or I would love to have a pint glass that alters a beer's bitterness based on the weather. Beer industry giants, I await your call. As I said, to every beer there is a season. But to pair the beer with the season, sometimes we need help. I talked to Caroline Wallace and Sarah Wood, co-founders of the Austin-based blog Bitch Beer, live on stage at South by Southwest. So I thought it would not be right for me to interview you without beer.
Woo! We are fans of that.
So I brought some beer.
We're gonna clap for that this time.
I got Shiner Bock, is that all right?
Yeah, yeah.
Are these twist-offs? Oh, thank goodness. All right.
Thank you.
Here you go. Sarah?
Cheers.
Cheers. Man, that just hits the spot. You know what I love about Shiner Bock? Is this, I feel like it's one of the few beers that is kind of bitter and has a lot of flavor and it's dark and kind of robust, but it's still such a great hot weather, daytime beer.
Totally.
Am I right?
Yeah, we have a lot of beers like that down here in Austin. Out of necessity, obviously.
Right,
you have to come prepared.
Yeah.
I wanted to talk to you guys about that, about the connection between beer and weather. Because to me, like, there's so many kinds of beer out there, and the kind of beer I want almost, I would say 80% depends on what the weather is. The other 20% depends on whether or not I've done any manual labor in the previous, like, 2 hours. So I'm going to say a type of weather, and I want you to tell me what you think is the perfect type of beer you want in this weather. Ready?
Ready. Ready.
Sunny and 80 degrees.
Berliner Weiss.
Caroline?
I'm going to go with like a session IPA. Something hoppy, but not super high alcohol and refreshing. Yeah.
For me, sunny and 80 degrees, I wrote down Bud Light in a can. Is that also an option?
It is an option.
I'm a big believer that there is a time and place for every beer. Like, I don't care how crappy you might consider a certain beer to be, there is a time and place for it.
Yeah, like when it's free.
Yeah.
All right, now this one's a tough one. I don't know how often you see this weather in Austin. Sunny and 35 degrees.
Ooh.
And cold. You've been outside. You've been outside and you just came in from being out in the cold. Mm-hmm. Maybe you were on a nice hike, a walk in the woods, and you come back inside and you feel that first rush of the warm air. Take off your jacket.
I'm
still sitting in the scene.
Sorry.
No, I'm kidding. Go on.
So many details.
Yeah.
I think for me, at 35 degrees, sunny doesn't matter at all. It's 35 degrees.
Yeah.
That's cold.
Right.
So I'm going to go like a big barrel-aged imperial stout or something high alcohol, stick to your ribs, like that you can, a sipper.
I'm going to go Belgian. In this scene that you're painting, there's like a roast in the oven and my dog's tail is just wagging out of control. And I want a triple or a quad, something big and fruity and estuary and robust to warm me back up from my hike.
I would go nice IPA.
Okay.
In this kind of weather. Mm-hmm. But those are good, yours are good suggestions too.
Wait, is it an IPA in a can?
Yeah.
Bottle.
Bottle.
Whoa. You know, when you've been out in the cold, you want to class it up a little.
Yeah.
Breezy, clouds giving way to sun, high of 66, but it's 11 a.m., so it's not sunny yet, but it will be.
I'm going to go coffee porter.
Whoa.
By virtue of 11 a.m.
Snap.
Yeah.
Sarah.
I'm going to be a little uncouth, and I'm going to go with a porter as well, but I'm just going to add cold brew on top of it.
Ah.
Do a mixed drink, like a beer cocktail.
Do you pour cold brew coffee into your beer?
I do. Gasps from the audience.
That is huge. That is a huge breakthrough in society, because often one of my issues is I consume a lot of caffeine. Sometimes I want beer, but I'm also feeling a little tired. Sometimes beer will give you temporary energy, but it can be short-lived. Caffeinated beer.
It's a game
total
changer.
Game changer.
It's a game changer. It's revolutionized my life.
Wow. Wow. All right. Now, before I get accused of being horribly sexist, can you please explain the derivation of the name of your website, Bitch Beer?
Yeah, we actually started this blog when we were pretty fresh out of college, actually. And so Bitch Beer was a term we heard a lot down here for kind of that beer we get for the girls at the party, because they're not going to drink real beer. So a wine cooler or a malt beverage or, you know, something lighter and fruitier. So we liked the idea because we actually, Sarah and I and five other women, so a group of seven women writing about craft beer, of kind of putting a little tongue-in-cheek play on that term and making it about great artisan craft beer.
We're taking it back.
All right. At what point do we not need any more kinds of beer in the world?
Yeah, there's a lot of dialogue about that right now, because there are actually at this time in the U.S. the most breweries that there have been since before Prohibition. Mm-hmm. So prior to Prohibition, it was like every little part of a town would have kind of on their block a little tiny microbrewery, and that supplied beer for maybe 50, 100 people. And so there were thousands in the U.S. because of that. But after Prohibition and kind of the industrialization of the beer industry, that number really, really fell. And we're with this kind of craft beer, microbeer explosion kind of back for the first time since then to this amount of breweries. So people talk about that a lot, but I think that the key probably is in finding a balance between this and that original thing. So maybe more breweries, there's room for more breweries, but maybe their growth plan isn't to become the next Sam Adams or New Belgium. You have to focus on being a restaurant that makes really great beer. And then maybe you distribute your beer just to the city of Austin or just in your city. But not everyone's going to be the next Sam Adams.
All right, you guys ready for the lightning round?
Yes. Yes.
All right. Let's talk about beer vessels and beer serving.
Okay.
Frosted mugs. What's your take?
No.
Get out of here.
No, thank you.
Agreed. Frosted mugs are the worst because they make the beer too cold. You lose your bubbles, you lose your flavor, you lose your aroma.
Yeah.
Bottles or cans?
Either in a glass, typically. Gonna drink straight out of it. Either one works, but I kind of go for a can a little bit more.
I'm a can man. I like the mouthfeel of the can. I like the way it feels on my mouth. I like that I don't need to worry about dropping it. I also feel like because the bottle is taller, it's more vertical. Mm-hmm. Each time you tilt the bottle back to drink from it, the beer has farther to travel before it gets to your mouth. Mm-hmm. And over the course of drinking the beer, that gins up a lot of fizz. And I think that as a result, the natural motion of tilting back a bottle to your mouth stirs up the beer more and makes it a little bit too carbonated. Whereas with a can, because it's more short and squat, the beer travels a shorter distance and therefore is not so fizzy when it gets to your mouth.
I have never considered this before. I was like, pull it together, mind blown, but pull it together.
This is a revolution.
If you go to places on like Bourbon Street or probably some spots on 6th Street here in Austin, you'll see some bars that serve beer in like ridiculous vessels of all kinds, giant test tubes or plastic guitars or God knows what. Are any of these redeemable? Like, is there ever a reason why one of these crazy vessels is better than a good old-fashioned glass?
I would say probably not to drink at a place that did most of those things, but I do like the idea of that beer helmet thing, because I've never worn one before.
Thank you, yes.
I wore one recently. They're incredibly difficult to talk about fizzing up your beer.
Okay, but really? The hard hat with the two can holders and the straws that come down?
That seems cool.
I've always wanted one of those. Sarah, was that everything it would be?
It was a dream come true.
Wow. All right, well, Caroline Wallace and Sarah Wood are the co-founders of the beer blog Bitch Beer and co-authors of Austin Beer, Capital City History on Tap. Check them out at bitchbeer.org. Big hand for Caroline and Sarah. Next week on The Sporkful, I'll talk sausages with Chicago Tribune food writer Kevin Pang. And we'll have a huge announcement about a big event we're doing in Chicago this summer. Remember to come to The Sporkful Brown Bag Lunch. It's a Google Hangout and a working lunch, as in, We're going to work on making our lunches better. Everyone's invited. Friday, June 12th, 1 p.m. Eastern. Join us at sporkful.com/hangout. This show is a production of WNYC and The Sporkful. It's produced by Ann Sani and me. We got help from Tim Ruggieri. Special thanks to Paula Schumann. Until next time, I'm Dan Pashman.
And I'm Christine from Brooklyn, reminding you to eat more, eat better, and eat more better.